video games.
Yeah, you don't have to try very hard.
Nope. No. It's my regular voice.
So now, before we've started episodes, I've successfully made fun of the guy.
No, just over, like, you just have recordings of me doing impressions or saying rude things about, like, half of the games industry.
Games, video 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 games.
It's August 5th, 2009.
And this is Idle Thumbs 37, reports suggest. And I'm Chris Remo, I guess.
So I'm Nick Brecken, allegedly. Yeah,
unconfirmed. This is definitely not necessarily Jake Rodkin coming up.
Yeah, it's actually Tim Langdell.
Okay.
Writing in as an anonymous commentator.
Yeah. Good.
It's probably Jake Rodkin, though, actually. Good.
Yeah.
You don't sound like yourself.
Oh, that's because I'm running myself through a sort of anonymity filter.
Good, right.
Yeah.
Voice modulator.
A vocoder.
A vocoder.
I'm we vocoded should run you through to a vocoder sound like one week. Yeah.
We should auto-tune you.
Babu. Babu. Yeah, no. So, we're all back, ready to talk about games.
Yeah. It's true.
That voice is easier for me to do this week.
Maybe we should just decide what we're going to talk about.
Let's get going with this cast.
We need like a topic, right?
All right. Well, how about Left 4 Dead?
Hey!
I hear that Left 4 Dead Missing Link free DLC cast, I mean, content is occurring.
Everything's a cast.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, free.
It's a cast.
Free in some circumstance. In one circumstance,
right?
Oh yeah.
It's going to cost you $7 on 360 or $0 on PC.
Yep.
Which made the internet slightly explode today.
Did it?
Well, it did on the forums anyway. I mean, I don't know where else to gauge it by.
Yeah. I didn't watch that.
Was that
fireworks show was aimed over the at hill Valve? For me.
A lot of people did aim it at Valve,
well, that's
and I think
silly.
It's probably not actually Valve's fault.
Man, how many times has that company gone on record saying, we try Microsoft to release our DLC for free?
Yeah.
How many times? Yeah, that's an Xbox Live thing. Microsoft
likes money.
They like money.
Yeah. I mean, that's come out a lot. I mean, Epic had a similar issue.
Wasn't there the thing where some people have, like, you put out your content on PSN, or there were a couple of people who did that for free first, and then Microsoft allowed?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
I remember hearing that.
I guess the PC doesn't have enough leverage.
If you put out content on PlayStation Network for free, I've heard that that has been leveraged against the XBLA team.
Left 4 Dead on PS3 confirmed.
Valve is putting out a new campaign for Left 4 Dead 1 for free.
It sounds pretty cool, actually. They said, I mean, for one thing, it bridges
the
actual story gap between
No Mercy and Death Toll,
Right, exactly.
So you get on the helicopter at the end of No Mercy, and then now you play what happens after it crashes.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good.
Yeah.
But one interesting thing they said about it is that their goal was to make a versus experience where you can get the entire cycle done in 30 minutes, which I think is great. And it's funny, too, because a lot of the reactions I saw from people on that were like, oh, well, that just shows they're just squeezing one out, out a quick one there.
Well,
it's like, well, also, that's an actual, like, gap that needs filling in that game. Yep. I mean,
That's sort of the Left 4 Dead equivalent of the shorter TF2 stuff.
Right.
Yes.
Like, that's pretty necessary. It's hard for me to dive into an entire full round of versus or co-op, for that matter. In that game, just because, you know, it is a pretty lengthy time commitment, especially versus. Cool. I mean, it's twice as long. That's good. And they said it'll have you know, the whole deal. It'll have, you know, versus mode. It'll have co-op mode. It'll have survival mode. And obviously, at launch, not all the levels had all that stuff. So,
yeah.
Do you know how much this is a response to people saying, where's our free L4D DLC?
I doubt it's a direct response. I can't imagine they finished, you know, like conceived, designed, and built this whole thing in that period of time.
Right, since E3,
that would be
I wouldn't
surprising.
Think so, but yeah.
What, in a matter of weeks? Like that there's no way. I mean,
Valve time does not seem to operate on a schedule resembling.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I suspect they I mean, based on what they said about how they ended up making the sequel, based on my discussions I've had with them, it sounded like pretty much what happened is they finished Left 4 Dead 1 and then they just kept making more content. And some of it, some of the stuff they ended up doing, like the revisions to the director and stuff, is not really easily retrofitted into the main game. Oh, there's a pizza here.
We'll be right back after this pizza.
God damn it.
I play Galita.
That's back and forth farting there.
Back and forth farting. We're back and forth farting.
Video game.
Okay. All right. So we're back. So basically what I think they did based on conversations I've had with the Valve guys, you know, over the last 6 months or so is basically they shipped Left 4 Dead 1. They immediately started working on new content. Some of it, you know, was sort of ended up being more significant in terms of additions than would have been, I don't know, easily practical within the context of the first game. Like it changes to the AI director, for example, and things changes to do with bosses and additions of bosses that would have required kind of going back and actually retrofitting things into existing levels. And I think rather than sort of just have some levels where all these new features exist and other ones where they don't, I think they figured it just made sense to actually just, you know, have those things stand alone as a game. One of the things that's interesting about them is they usually have specific goals they're trying to achieve with a particular game or a particular release. That's certainly the case with the individual Half-Life 2 episodes. And, you know, when they did have the goal with this latest DLC about kind of creating this versus mode that you can actually complete in under half an hour, I mean, that's a goal that I think didn't necessarily need all that extra stuff to actually achieve. I mean, I know that with the new bosses, for example, in Left 4 Dead 2, they're trying to pretty specifically address a lot of the little strategies that people kind of harp on. You know, everyone piling into a closet, all that kind of stuff. I mean, both the charger and the spitter both have pretty direct counters to that kind of strategy. And so, I mean, that's a goal they were trying to achieve there. But with the one, and what's this upcoming one called?
Crash something?
Crash Bandicoot.
Oh, right. With Crash Bandicoot, what they're trying to do is, you know, provide this more streamlined experience. And I guess they figured they could just do that within the confines of Left 4 Dead 1. So I think basically what happened is they were just making a whole bunch of content. Some of it went into Left 4 Dead 2. Some of it is this DLC for Left 4 Dead 1.
I wouldn't be surprised, though, if they had gotten to a point where they said, we're just, you know, maybe they threw out some ideas and, you know, we could connect these things and do a DLC. We're going to work on Left 4 Dead 2. And then they thought, well, maybe we should, you know, finish that and just release it as a DLC thing. But the other thing is it actually works as pretty effective publicity for them. You know, I mean, coming out in September, getting people playing Left 4 Dead again just as the sequel is
coming
out.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I've been tracking personally the ever since Valve started releasing weekly sales charts for Steam. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't release actual discrete numbers, but they do release the weekly sales positions, you know,
relative to everything else. Yeah.
Right. In a given week. Whereas the stuff they put just right up in the top 10 chart on the front page of steampowered.com, that's just, you know, the top selling game at whatever moment, you know, for the last hour or 2 hours or whatever it is. But, you know, now they release these weekly ones as well. And I've been charting them myself. And it's interesting because Left 4 Dead 1, after they announced Left 4 Dead 2, Left 4 Dead 1 jumped back to number one on the chart. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it really goes actually to, like, it really speaks to Valve's, everything they say about how all this stuff works is that when you build publicity about something that's coming up, your old thing will do better.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, they keep saying it and it's, I mean, it seems to be the case. I'm actually really curious, you know, in a week or two, to look back at what happened this week and see if after announcing this DLC, once again, Left 4 Dead jumps up again, even before the DLC is released. And I expect it will, or at least it'll jump up partially.
Part of that's probably also, I mean, I think last week Left 4 Dead was number 3.
Yeah.
I would guess that I think number 1 was Dawn of War 2, which had a 50% sale. I mean, I would guess that Steam games just in general, and that being the most recent, or not Steam games, Valve games on Steam.
Yeah, but it doesn't
they still go up and down, though.
Chart.
I mean, there are still trends.
But also there are trends amongst games that are, you know, third-party games that are on Steam that are just, you know. If there aren't any games coming out that week, I would guess that Valve tends to trend upward. You know, I mean, if any games are going to sell on Steam, that But anyway,
that's true. But it's another interesting thing about this chart is that this year, I mean, part of it is just that they're you know, obviously Valve doesn't have a big title that's releasing right now, but
yeah,
there has been an increasing trend, or at least there was for a couple months where some Valve games were even falling off the charts. Like there were times when Team Fortress 2 wasn't even on the top 10, and there've been a lot more strong third party sellers on Steam recently, which has been interesting. I mean, I think, and they, you know, they did recently say that they've seen 97% year-over-year sales growth, mm-hmm. and that can't be coming purely from their own titles. So, I mean, I think the service probably is slightly moving away from just the, you know, kind of Valve game delivery device
Valve with bonus third party.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly. I mean, I think it's obviously still heavily weighted towards Valve titles in terms of most likely to be a number one seller, but it's definitely becoming a much more diverse service, and that's one of the things I'm kind of looking at. Anyway, that's Left 4 Dead. It's a fun game.
Yep.
They're still making more stuff. Oh, yeah? I haven't played it in a few weeks.
Survival mode is really good.
Yeah?
Just for jumping in and just playing for like 20 minutes.
It is good for that, yeah.
It's perfect.
It's the quickest mode by far.
It's perfect. I played on my lunch break.
Oh, really?
It's really nice to just like sit down and play a couple of games.
That's cool. Yeah, the computers at my office are not equipped for that or for anything. They're not even equipped for browsing the web. It's pretty horrible.
Oh.
Why am I talking about that? It's been on my mind a lot recently because it makes it hard to do my job. Anyway. Let's see. Oh, you know what? I forgot to... We talked about last week on the Real Podcast last week, the first one. I talked about the EA shareholder meeting. And I wanted to append that. I completely forgot. Patrick Klepek called me on this. He pointed out I forgot to mention the last question that the amazing guy asked, the guy who asked about, you know, about
your why last did, CEO.
Yeah, why those meetings were right.
Games.
Yeah. And
or better game demos.
Better game demos, meeting. Yeah. I found my notes, and it had, or some of the notes I took, including, I am disappointed that the meetings have decreased in fun quotient every year you've been Jesus. Here.
Man, fun quotient. Going down. Yeah. Tilt going wow. down.
I know.
Metacritic.
So there's that, and then he asked about the Take-Two thing, and then so there was the last thing he asked, which is possibly the most amazing thing. This guy says, at one point, you guys had a picture of Michael Jordan on a 386 computer. I tried to talk to your lawyer to get a copy of it, but she was unable to finagle me a copy of one. It really is a delightful picture.
Jesus.
And this guy went on about this for a while.
A picture of Michael Jordan on a 386 computer?
A 386 computer? Or something? Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Maybe someone else has seen this picture. This guy certainly had. And Riccatello was just like, yeah, I don't really know if we have the rights to that or what that is, but you should talk to Jeff Brown about that, who's just another one of EA's executives. And I like the fact that the EA CEO just sort of diverted this guy onto a different EA executive.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you should definitely just go talk to Jeff Brown about that after the meeting.
Executive customer service.
Yeah. It's pretty hilarious. So
hopefully over like, you know, like a salami roll or something those guys like had a conversation about, or like, you know, a little turkey wrap.
Right.
They had a conversation over a couple sliders. They talked about Michael Jordan and the 386.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he said, I suggest you intersect Jeff Brown about this.
What?
Which I always enjoy that ridiculous business lingo. Go intersect him. I'm now kind of curious about that picture, actually. This guy went on for a long time. I didn't transcribe the whole thing. I because he went on for a while, but he definitely had a really clear idea of what this picture was, and he was describing it in quite some depth.
He really wanted to print it up for a poster for his room.
It's a little creepy. It was a weird guy. It was amazing that he had all this shit ready to go. You know what I mean? Because he clearly
was he
had a,
from like right. a paper.
I see no one else is here. I have prepared a list of questions. Right.
Yeah. I mean, he must have had a priority. He must have. He obviously asked them in a certain priority because he couldn't have. He, you know, it sounded like this was contingency plan. Like, oh man, if there's no one behind me, I can ask this one. And if there's still no one behind me, then I can move on to that one. And I wonder if he would have
people behind me, so he killed them all.
Right. And I wonder if he would have kept going.
Yeah.
Because after Riccatello said that, he's just like, well, anyone else? Nope. All right. Meeting's adjourned. And I wonder if this guy was just kind of like, wait, but
once you get to, I hear that you guys had one time I saw a picture of Michael Jordan on a 386.
Yeah.
It's like, why are we here?
Yeah.
That is definitely when the we have like blown a six-figure sum on having these people sit here and managing this conference call hardware. Yeah. Must have certainly been racing through Riccatello's mind.
Right.
Like, I'm going to have to report this damn meeting to the actual board.
Yeah, yeah. At next year's shareholder meeting, someone's going to ask me why we spent so much on shareholder meetings.
So that's cool.
Yep, that happened. Speaking of Electronic Arts, actually, they had their real conference call today, not their bullshit, like, weirdo conference call.
The one where they screen the callers.
They had the one where they actually say things about, like, the company that happened.
Yes.
And one of the things Riccatello said was, see if I can load up the actual quote here. He said, you know, basically, after fiscal year 2009... One of the lessons, he says, one of the lessons we had from fiscal year 9 was that we bunched up too many titles into the Q3 quarter. Some of the titles crowded out the competition, but some were crowded out even by other EA titles.
This was the, there are 12 months in the calendar year revelation.
Quote. Right, exactly.
That was like, I think that was like, his summation was like, well, yeah, we discovered there were 12 months in the calendar.
Yeah.
Jesus
we looked at
Christ.
A calendar. We
that gives your investors
actually,
a lot of confidence.
It like, actually lasts longer than right, October to December.
We can release games in any month.
Yeah. So that's good. I feel like publishers keep saying, I feel like for the last 3 years, people like, keep saying
oh,
they
yeah,
were
Christmas
less,
is yeah. hard. Christmas is really actually yeah. maybe not. Anyway, we're announcing our Christmas lineup.
Right.
Yeah.
It's got all the games in it.
Yeah.
But I mean, have you noticed that Q1 2010 is the fucking the new Christmas?
Yes.
2009?
Yeah.
Like, Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's going to be really interesting to see what happens when a bunch of games people want. Come out in January,
and
February, March.
Yeah.
Everybody just bought Christmas presents. Right. Yeah. Like, I don't know. That could be an interesting...
Silence, it'll work.
That could be an interesting failure. I don't know.
It might also just be that...
Might just be that it works.
It might be that your Christmas money goes to, you know...
Right, yeah. Grandma's envelope
of
cash.
Goes to Best Buy gift certificates.
Yep. Which then are converted... you know, sort of through a mob boardwalk or something to...
What? What are you saying?
I don't know.
What words are
your Christmas coming? Money becomes Best Buy gift certificates, which are then converted to stereo equipment, which is sent through a guy's van, comes back out as small bills, which turns into a brick of cocaine, which is then traded for a box full of Bioshock 2 games.
Thanks, Jake. Thanks.
Wow.
Thanks for that convenient
explanation. Put the oxygen mask back on, I think.
Sorry.
It's like the...
it was the beginning of a money laundering scheme.
I see that.
Just keep it going. Because I'm retired.
All right.
Anyway, have you guys heard about that?
are both Dragon Age and Mass Effect 2, are they actually coming out this year, or is one of both of those delayed? I feel like those are actually both still coming out this year.
I think they're both coming out this year. I think Dragon Age is coming out first, and then Mass Effect.
That's kind of weird.
It is weird. It's still going to be a busy holiday.
I know. It's still going to be Modern Warfare 2. Brutal Legend comes out, you know. Yeah. I mean, most of those are EA games, actually.
Yeah.
Weird.
I don't know.
Yep.
You guys said you had something to say about the Brutal Legend?
Oh, yeah.
Nick Brecken?
Well, no, yeah, Chris had something to say.
Yeah,
Chris Ramo?
Nick and I are both going to a multiplayer event for that game tomorrow, so, I mean, we haven't played it recently or anything, but but it was interesting. I saw on Twitter today that Eric Robson, who's the Double Fine lead designer, he was the lead designer on Psychonauts and also Brutal Legend. He was saying that they actually developed the multiplayer of Brutal Legend first.
Yeah.
And then retroactively kind of went back and used those mechanics that they hammered out to make the single player.
I think as far as I understand, the multiplayer is going to be some sort of mob-based. I mean, you know, in the single player portion, you control armies of guys at some point, right?
Yeah.
And I think the multiplayer
Your squad.
Right, yeah. I think the multiplayer is based around that. So I guess that would make sense if they...
Yeah, I remember people first knew that Double Fine had started building their second project after Psychonauts because the job posting was for a multiplayer programmer.
Right, and everyone was like, Tim Schafer was like, we're going to do something crazy, you know, new. And everyone was like, oh, he's doing a multiplayer game.
Yeah, that was their first hire after Psychonauts.
Yeah.
I remember for a while the scuttlebutt was like, they're making a multiplayer strategy game.
Yes, yeah, an RTS or something. Multiplayer RTS is what I remember, yeah.
They are making a multiplayer game that has... one unit controlling a squad.
Right.
So.
Pikmin, perhaps? Probably not.
No.
We'll find out pretty soon.
Brutal Legend.
We'll find out slightly too late to tell you on this week's podcast.
Yeah.
So you hear about it from everyone else first.
Yeah.
And we'll come back.
Tune into IGN.
Yeah.
look forward to other people's coverage of Brutal Legend multiplayer.
Yeah. I did think that was interesting because that's pretty unusual for, you know, any game Schafer's ever made before, basically.
Yeah, it's a definite style that developers use that don't come from the adventure game heritage.
Right. Mm. Yeah, exactly.
You know, we try at Telltale to work out the multiplayer sort of core components first and then throw all of that away and don't tell anyone that that's how it's made. That's pretty much how adventure games have been made.
Oh, yeah?
Since little text known, adventures.
Little known secret of
them. Yeah, the first Infocom games started as MUDs.
God. The worst adventure games would be made. Man, MUDs.
Well, you don't like MUDs now? MUDs. We're going to get a letter about how you don't like MUDs.
About for like a million months.
No, I just mean that would be an awful adventure game. What?
MUDs. Remember, MUDs? This is my thing that I've had.
Oh, yeah. Like what do you have to say about a MUD?
Not much, really.
Oh, good. Well, thanks.
My Fat Princess.
Oh, right. The best MUD of all. The precursor to MUDs.
Yeah, yeah.
Fat Princess is the precursor to MUDs.
Pick up Princess. Yeah. No, I did. It's not very good.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it either, to be honest.
I don't know why I bought it, because you said it wasn't any good and then I bought it.
Well, that'll teach you to listen to me.
I felt obligated because I don't use my PS3 for games. And so I thought, well, I'll buy a game on this. And
we're making enemies.
Yeah. Oh, whoops. Yeah. I don't use my Wii either. Anyway.
Jesus, Nick.
Actually, I did today.
You played Wii Sports Resort.
Yeah, I played Wii Sports Resort and I fucking hate it.
Oh, okay.
Holy crap.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Man.
No, actually, I love the
game. You didn't hate it last week.
I love the game. I love the game. The Wii Motion Plus is awful.
What is awful about it?
It's actually so bad that I was talking to Chris Failer. He thought his was broken, but I don't think it's broken. I think the Wii Motion Plus is just awful.
Did you watch the 3-minute safety video? That tells you how to play. Are you sure you plugged it in correctly? Were you using Wii Motion Plus?
I don't think you can skip it. I skipped it in my mind, but no, it's the calibration. And I think what it is when you're playing games that are fast, you know, like table tennis,
right?
It gets screwed up. And then there's a point where you hit, there's a point that you hit, like, it'll just start recalibrating in the middle of you'll serve the fucking ping pong and the guy will hit it back. And while the ball is traveling in the air, it will stop, ask you to recalibrate it, set it on your thing.
Oh, man.
And then you have to, there's no like, are you ready to go? It's just the ball's coming right back at you. And like that, you know, okay, it's Wii Sports, who cares? But when you're actually trying to get to like 2000 skill level and you're on 1600 and if you lose, you lose like 200 skill points, you just want to like, it's awful. It's so stupid, but it happens like consistently. Like every 2 minutes this happens, you have to recalibrate.
Wow. I don't remember this happening when we played this game.
It happens like maybe for an hour and then it'll be fine for like 2 more hours. And then, you know, like the next time you play it, it'll be terrible. And then it just comes and goes. I don't really know what the deal is, but I'm not the only person having the problem. So it's wow. Really, it's really disappointing because I really actually like the game. But the Motion Plus just seems to have a lot of issues.
That's too bad. Seems like they could have made that slightly better by putting in a confirmation dialogue box.
Yeah, that's really awful.
Calibrates.
Yeah, you have to pick it off the terrible table and then sort of remember which way the ball is coming. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
It's really frustrating.
Well, fortunately, we were fooled by only playing it for 40 minutes.
Well, even in that 40 minutes, though, it asked us to recalibrate.
Yeah,
it did. Yeah, but it wasn't... It was like,
I don't remember it being a burden.
Yeah, I think it's more of a burden when, I mean, it does increase.
When you're trying?
Yeah, well, yeah, when you're trying and when it you know, it happens more
when
frequently.
When you get into one of those ruts where it just happens all the time.
Yeah.
I wonder if certain actual units are just, you know,
it's possible.
Defective.
It's possible, but I don't know. That's frustrating if true.
Yeah.
But anyway,
well,
yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah.
We don't like any games.
Oops. Here at Idle Funds, we hate video games.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I really like Sports Resort, though.
Yeah.
It's good. Table tennis is actually really, really good.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
we
were
really
having
good.
A lot of fun with that one.
That was
really
probably
solid.
My favorite one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except for recalibration.
Yeah. That's no good.
Did you unlock the recalibration challenge mode? Where just you have to guess if
right.
it's a fake or a real recalibration, how long it's going to take?
Yeah.
It's like active reloading
like
Gears of War.
It's like a WarioWare.
Right. Press the A button. You have to press it exactly at the moment that recalibration is complete. And then it trains you to get better at the table tennis recalibration situation.
And then you can just go right through it. You don't even notice it.
Yeah. Oh.
Just instinctual. Yeah.
I'm sad that you missed
working
that
up
mode.
To that. I got to get that stamp.
They hit it inside the basketball game, so no one will find it.
God, that game is
Oh, awful. Man. I did play. Actually, I played quite a bit of the basketball game later.
I did too.
It's not that good.
It's really bad.
I like that you played a lot of it. I played this horrible basketball.
Well, I was trying to. The games take forever, for one thing.
They take forever.
Like, did you play the actual pickup game where you actually play on a court?
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes forever.
It's really bad.
It's really long, and you have to go through so many repeated motions. Like, I mean, really,
and also things are entirely random. Like, I was playing against somebody else, and it's just when you steal the ball, it's just a random chance of like whether you actually grab the ball away or not.
Really? I grabbed it like every single fucking time.
Well, that's the other thing too. Like, yeah.
That's the other thing. It's random, but you get it every time.
Well, yeah, but like the time that you don't, and it's like, you know, the time somebody dunks on you, it's no fun.
It's really not very fun. The actual just straight up shooting a basket is fine. I mean, it's, you know, it is what it is. It's what we basically assumed, which is like any, like bowling, but upside down, essentially.
But you throw it up granny style or like,
no, I mean, overhand.
That's not how you throw a basket.
Overhand, but I mean up, like with your hands, like the way you fucking throw a basketball.
So
like
you raise the roof.
Yes, you raise the roof, holding a Wii remote, and then you win. I mean, you know, in reality, it's a Wii Sports game, so you can really do a pretty wide variety of types of motion, and it will still have the same effect.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I mean, that one's fine. Yeah, I mean,
it's like when you swing the sword in Zelda,
right?
But
and it's fine. It's like it
less slovenly, probably.
A little less slovenly, yeah. I mean, it is. That's pretty good. Like the actual just reading of what you're doing is fine, but the like basketball game is pretty much garbage. I mean, it's
right.
It's a very weird implementation of a sports game. You know, where you're passing to a dude, then taking over for that guy because it's so simplistic that you're essentially just going through a repeated series of actions like 40 times in a row.
Isn't that kind of how NBA Jam works, except not fun, maybe?
Well, you can control the player in NBA Jam.
Yeah, in NBA Jam, you have direct control over the player.
Don't control the guy.
That's what's so frustrating about these games. It's like they're so resistant to allowing you to control a guy in a video game.
That didn't really bother me in the baseball game in the original Wii Sports, that it was just pitching and hitting. I got used to that.
Yeah, no,
in basketball,
basketball is intrinsically mobile, though.
In baseball, you move towards the ball and catch it or don't. So if the game handles that.
Well, what's frustrating about basketball?
If you're the batter, you don't move. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For real in baseball.
In basketball, it's like a guy will, you know, try and steal from you. He'll fall on his face. And then sometimes your guy will just not go to the basket. Like, he'll just do random things. He'll kind of turn it a circle, get confused.
You have some kind of ball. Nominal control by, like, tilting it around.
Well, you can also dribble.
But that doesn't work.
Which sort of sometimes forces your guy forward.
Anyway, so basketball sounds really great.
It's terrible.
Why are we still talking about this? We're probably done.
Yeah. And Fat Princess is terrible too.
what did you not like about it? I'm curious what you didn't like about
it. Every game is a stalemate until the very end, and then it's not.
Yeah.
It's just not balanced very well. Did you have any problems
connecting? Because I hear in the final version, a lot of people can't ever get
a
game.
It took me 10 tries to get a game on Saturday, and then, you know, it got a little bit better the next day, but it was not much.
Yeah.
It was incredibly frustrating. And then once you connect, I mean, they're working on this problem. They, you know, obviously are aware of it, but like once you connect, the lag was bad in most cases as well. So, I mean, it was, but even when I found a good game, it just was not all that enjoyable. I mean, actually, you know, I mean, I bought into a lot of it. Like I, the classes are fine. I kind of actually enjoy the combat to an extent, but it's just from an overall game standpoint. It just there was no flow.
That's how I felt. That's
there was
exactly
no flow.
Felt,
there was
right,
no.
Exactly.
There was none of that.
You're
Team
just kind
Fortress
of in there
where
doing
you're actually,
stuff. And
yeah.
You don't get the sense
really
of sort of a tide that's moving towards a goal. It's like
what you need is. I mean, I was playing as a medic for the most part, and you can sort of push a tide at that point, but it requires everybody to realize that hey, there's a medic who's doing stuff. You should follow him, and then I mean, just doing that on PS9
is almost
impossible. It's
hard to count on that. Yeah.
So.
Speaking of other games you don't like, you played the IL2 demo.
Oh yeah,
on Xbox
don't play that.
360.
Yeah, terrible frame rate problems. It's kind of disappointing because I was sort of hoping that it would be halfway decent. It actually looks really nice. Like
what is this game?
It's the IL2 Sturmovik. It's the flight sim series that
Maddox. That guy Maddox.
Yeah,
does.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a PC series for a really long time, and you know it's got a lot of sort of hardcore followers, but. They finally, you know, what Gaijin Entertainment is bringing to 360 and PS3. And, yeah, it's just a really bad game. It's just
it's
a frame rate. And, yeah, it looks nice, but when you shoot a bomber, the flame effect just grinds it to a halt. Like, volumetric smoke, just, you know, 5 frames per second. So, apparently not a very...
They're having issues with their emissions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything you say sounds sleazy.
Having trouble with their emissions?
If anyone's curious as to who's talking right now, I, Jake, am talking about emissions. Nick is talking about a flight sim, and Chris is calling me sleazy.
Thanks.
Yeah, that was your update.
Good. Are you going to keep pop in with those every once in a while?
No, I'll forget. All right. Chris is saying so.
Thanks. You played... Jake was just warming up there. I don't know if I can... Nick, you also played some more Dawn of Discovery and liked it this time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I didn't hate it last time.
You hated it.
Did I?
You hated it so much.
Last time, Nick hated Dawn of Discovery.
Yeah. No, I feel really bad for
hating.
I guess, I don't think I hated it. I think I dismissed it. But I don't know. There were some things that I said about it that I still stand by, though. But it is a really good game. I think people should check it out. But it does. I mean, we spoke about it without really knowing. But it as you mentioned last time, it does have that sort of nice SimCity progression where your cities sort of build up and evolve. And my experience with it though was interesting. I was incredibly frustrated with it, and then about hour three, I found the secret to not being terrible. Just satisfying your citizens, doing what the game... I mean, it was so dumb. At the time, I was like, if only where there was a mode that explained this to you in a way that was sort of separate from this mode, that it wasn't so hard. And if only there was some way that they could just clearly tell me, train me, maybe.
What is this?
And hold my hand.
If they could get that campaign button off the main screen, it's just cluttering it up.
Why are they forcing me into this? I don't understand. Like,
Oh, man. Weird. Yeah.
So
you played the campaign.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, then I played another one, and I was less bad. But here's the thing, though. It is the kind of game, though, that you know, even if you know what's going on, you can screw yourself over really badly.
Yeah, you can.
It's difficult. I mean, it's a difficult game. It's the kind of game where you have to sort of know the steps, and if you skip one of the steps or don't understand what they are, then you're pretty much done. And it's not a really intuitive game either. There are some mechanics and systems going on that just don't really. I mean, the fact that you have the two trading hubs, and then you have to always get the rights to trade with the other one, or to build build the south.
There's the Oriental trading guy. You have to get rights from your European.
It seems
European
kind of unnecessary and a little.
It is a little weird.
It's a little weird,
I think the game could have better messaging or maybe it'll be a little more intuitive. Yeah. But once you know them, it all kind of works together.
But if you don't know them, like there's a point where you have to have spice and be providing that to your citizens.
Right. Well, you gotta have spice.
You gotta have spice.
You gotta have the spice.
Kill that snake.
A unit said that to me, and I didn't know what it meant. I thought he was just being spicy.
It. I heard that.
You gotta have spice.
I was like, well, yeah, I guess. Yeah.
The disco dancing fro guy from WarioWare showed up as an advisor. What the hell?
Gotta have some spice.
Gotta have the spice.
You
gotta have it.
But then I realized,
and
that
then
was
he's
a-
like, "Excuse me, do you have any pictures of Michael Jordan on a 386? The citizens demand a picture of Michael Jordan." It was a wonderful picture. I tried to procure it.
It was quite delightful.
Your public relations representative. What the hell? And then you decided it was time to play the campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah. I passed him on to my CFO.
My voice is gone again.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Jake is destroying it. So. But yeah, Dawn of Discovery is really fun. It's interesting because it really is all about, man, Jake,
what?
You're killing me.
What?
nothing. It really is entirely, I'm sorry.
Man, Jake, you're killing me.
You're killing me. You gotta have the spice.
It's, you know, you do get to a point in that game where it kind of clicks, but it's interesting because it's, you know what, actually, this really ties into a reader mail we got that I'm just going to read now instead of waiting for reader mail.
This reminds me of a reader mail.
Well, no, because it's an observation that I was going to make, and we can kill two birds with one stone here.
Reader mail, bonus world.
What?
Go.
No. Yeah. Evan Gould writes, So I was playing Dawn of Discovery on Chris's recommendation, and the game's economic management system suddenly clicked in my head with the fact that this game is made in Europe. I noticed how all the businesses in this game are an absolute drain on government finances, and the only income is provided by individual taxes, perhaps reflecting continental European discomfort with fully private markets. Businesses' production levels must be managed by you, the benevolent bureaucratic overlord, and are not subject to the way it's managed in the SimCity games, where you create a favorable environment and businesses manage their own affairs, which you then tax. Anyway, I thought it was interesting how deeply ingrained ideas about optimal economic systems are ingrained in each culture, Anglo-Saxon versus continental Europe, that they filter through in video games made by people who probably have no real education regarding economics. Great game, by the way. Never would have heard of it without the podcast. 7G.
Wow, I feel really uneducated now. But
that's totally true.
It is absolutely true because that was my second playthrough. I realized, oh wait, everything takes up a lot of money.
You can't assume that there's a free market going on.
Right? I mean,
you are essentially dictating. So I mean, it is that kind of European, like semi-socialist thing where it's like there is free market to the extent that an individual can run a business and make a living off of it, but you are there as the government to sort of keep everything in place and like regulate the system.
So which game do you guys like more, Dawn of Discovery or SimCity?
I like them for different reasons, but for entirely gameplay reasons. Like in SimCity...
Man, I thought you were going to say for entirely gay reasons.
Homosexual reasons.
I was like, what? This is going weird.
No, they're very different. Like, it's funny because I don't really like... In like a real-time strategy game, I sometimes get kind of irritated by kind of the Blizzard model. I love Blizzard RTS games, but sometimes just dealing with all the resource management, it seems a little silly to me, like especially in the middle of a battle. But a game like Dawn of Discovery, which is entirely about resource management, almost entirely about it, I think is really fun because the game kind of puts that right up front and it's like, this is what you're going to be doing. Mm. And I kind of like that. Whereas in SimCity, I spend more time kind of worrying about just the layout of my city and like kind of building a cool looking city and stuff. I keep trying to do that in Dawn of Discovery, but it's really hard because you have to keep readjusting the ratio of like how many of this kind of businesses you have.
You essentially have to destroy sections of your city to make
exactly,
that work.
Right. Yeah. And so I
that's kind of cool though.
It is kind of cool. It does lead to extreme city planning that I never
remember doing in SimCity,
where right from the beginning of the game, I know 5 tiers from now,
I know
basically what I'm going to be working towards. So I'm going to start with this really cool central city square, have these little pockets that have their own kind of churches and factories and stuff. And it's kind of hardcore.
That's kind of awesome, actually.
It is pretty awesome.
Like, whatever. But I mean, maybe it's not fun, but it's a cool
thing. No, it's really fun, but it's weird because I play it differently, you know, like in a game like Civilization or SimCity or something, I would just kind of start and play a game
sort of
like forever. Yeah. In this game, I find myself restarting every once in a while just because I want to try and make it better. Mm. And every time I restart, I build a much better city and I can see that much further into the future.
You're like a human version of that, of the introversion city building system.
What?
You know that... you know the name of that thing? Bah, someone's going to tell me what it is on the forums. Introversion, the guys who made
Darwinian, Uplink, and all that. Yeah,
they've got some project going on whose name I can't remember for the life of me, but it's built around this sort of procedural city building algorithm that sort of obeys its own written rules about how cities sort of grid out and where buildings and population centers rise, and they populate entire dynamically generated cities and buildings and stuff. And it's
sounds interesting, Jake.
I'm Jake, and it is very interesting. And anyway, it sounds like they've put videos up of the game sort of iterating through building cities as they've evolved this, and you are the slow motion stupid human brain. Like you're like the weird like meat mind version of what those guys are. You're being replaced.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you definitely have to take that role yourself in this game. There's definitely nothing procedural going on.
I know.
It's all but it's an interesting comparison because you do have to be that. You do have to be that system because the game won't do it for you. I mean, it is, you are balancing that stuff yourself, and I make it sound more ridiculous than it is. I mean, you know, as you're doing this, you can see what you have too much of and what you don't have. And I mean, it's not like there aren't, you know, it's not like the game just hangs you out to dry and says you're doing it wrong, and then you just have to try things until you get it right.
I think the introversion game is called Subversion, actually.
Oh, okay, Subversion. I remember seeing something about that, but I don't know much about it. I haven't read much. But yeah, it's a cool game. I hope I didn't make it sound too scary, but it's. You know, it does benefit from giving it a few tries. Yeah, it's scary until you kind of know what you're doing.
It's a trial and error thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, that sounds like the sort of thing that not everyone is into, but some people probably actually want to play SimCity-style games for that and have it actually be rewarded, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I like it. I think I tend to be more, I mean, you were saying you don't like how StarCraft has sort of like a blend of the two, but that's sort of more my style.
I don't dislike it, but sometimes it just sort of bothers me on principle. It just seems like such a preposterous thing to be doing in the middle of a battle. I don't know.
I suppose I kind of like the sort of dependency there where, you know, you have to have one system that supports the other. I mean, I like that in like a game like Stronghold where, you know, it has that same sort of chain of economy, you know, economic buildup, but it's there to support something else, like another component. I kind of like that balance, but
good point, Nick.
Yeah, thanks.
People always say they can never tell us apart. So,
oh, yeah. Well, anyway,
so I'm Nick Brecken.
Oh, good.
I'm Nick Brecken as well.
Oh, and I'm good. Big Bird. And I'm Nick Brecken. So there's some different opinions on Dawn of Discovery that hopefully should give you an idea of whether you'd like it.
The other thing I wanted to say about Dawn of Discovery, though, was that I still
speaking of Trine,
speaking of Far Cry
and Far Cry 2.
yeah, this is the new that.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Ooh, this is the new that.
No, but I wanted to reiterate that I really wish that there was more of a, like, more attention to the citizens and sort of, you know, I guess, you know, the first of all, the citizens that are just living in houses just sort of walk around aimlessly and have no real purpose, which I find kind of odd and silly. But then also the workers, you know, you can't really, unless you zoom way in, and they're just not very distinctive. I like
it. Needs the traffic simulation add-on like SimCity.
Yeah, it does. It needs something. It needs more of a distinction in the city itself. I get a lot of enjoyment out of things like that. I was talking about why this game sort of clicked for me, and it was when I got to build like a cobblestone road, just because right. For whatever reason,
you get
I
to
like
upgrade your road from a dirt road to a cobblestone road.
It was really
road,
weird,
yeah.
But I like that sort of minute detail within one of, you know, in these city games. Like I sort of like to see that, you know, those slight changes and it.
Yeah. No, it's true. Those cobblestone roads can fuck you too. I was can screw you, can inconvenience you. I was
fuck you in the ass.
I was in my most recent game. I haven't played this game in a while because I was at Comic-Con and then this weekend I was gone too. And then, but before that, you know, my most recent save, I was actually trying to upgrade my entire city to cobblestone. And, you know, to build one segment of a cobblestone road.
It's very benevolent.
It's, yeah, I know. It just looks so, it looks cool. I mean, it's, you know, it's like
citizens, I give you a great gift.
Right. It costs like a fairly minimal amount of gold and only one unit of stone. I mean, it's, you know, basically as low as it can cost while still requiring a material. But doing it for your entire fucking huge island-sized city, I basically have bankrupted all of my stone quarries to do this. It's kind of hilarious. But
what a great guy this is. Thinks he's giving us something nice with this cobblestone road. Where's my job?
Yeah, exactly. I've created the deficit with stone. And so now I've got like half of the city decked out with cobblestone road. And then every single time a worker comes, like takes this like wheelbarrow full of stone back to the warehouse, then it's like three more stones pop up. I'm like, yes. And I build three more squares of cobblestone and then I have zero again. And it's like, I'm in this horrible, weird, stupid.
You've
like,
become the worst ruler.
I know. Yeah. I'm horrible. Yeah. I'm a tax and spend liberal is what I am.
Yeah.
I'm becoming a caricature. And so all my money in stone is just going towards upgrading my roads.
Statues of yourself.
Yeah, right. But you can build statues too, and that also costs stone.
Yeah.
And I end up in these situations where, you know, because the different buildings are different sizes.
See, I want to see where the poor citizens little that are chipping away on these projects. Like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Well, no, those
we've been
guys
doing
are
this
fine.
For like 17
hey, no,
years.
Those guys are employed. Shut up.
Oh.
They got jobs building my statues.
It's everyone else who can't work because they have no money to even pay us and they do.
Right.
Yeah.
See, I got caught in this weird, like, industrial complex, but it was like a tool industrial complex where I built up all of these tool manufacturing buildings, and then I realized, oh shit, they're all like costing like millions of dollars of support.
Right.
And what am I going to do with these tools? Oh, I'll ship them over to like, you know, some weird country halfway across the map. So then I had this this like, I was hanging by my economy was hanging by a thread.
You became weird like, on this. Like third world export.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Everything was dependent on tools. Like tools were my oil. And then the Corsairs came out of nowhere and blew up all my ships. And so then I've got like 60,000 tools. I'm in debt to like, you know, 10,000 gold. And there was no way to get out of that. Like, what are you going to do? Just like, I was sitting on my pile of tools, just kind of, my citizens were starving. Buildings were like,
you should
disheveled.
Use those tools
to- This game is awesome. That's so funny because I remember
that's when your workers rise up and you're fucked.
I had the tools, but no sickle. I was.
Oh, man. That was hardcore, Nick. Yeah. It's funny because like the day before I saw you on Twitter and you're like, what the fuck? You need tools to build a tool workshop? This game is bullshit.
you're like, oh, I know how tool workshop.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did.
That's all I'm going to build.
It was that playthrough.
Now I can build them. Yeah. So many tools.
I guess, right, just imagine you sort of on this, on a throne, like just.
Yeah.
On a 20-foot tool encrusted
throne,
right? And your throne is built of tools.
Yeah,
and they give you a plate that's made out of tools. Oh, we have. I'm sorry.
Your Midas tool. Yeah. Everything I touch turns to tools.
No.
Yeah.
So that's what happened in your game?
Yeah.
Oh wow, that sounds crazy.
Yeah, I can't believe that it was smart enough to put you on a 30-foot high throne of tools, and have the throne be made of tools, and have them serve you dishes made of tools with tools on them.
See, that's what we need. You
I
know?
Like that Nick is the master of creating weird, fucked up parallels to the real world in like empire building strategy.
Yeah, you've created export driven nation. Way to go!
You created the Iraq War, like the export driven nation, like a jihad, like basically like all of these things you have modeled. Accidentally?
Do you remember Civilization 2? Where
you're a horrible ruler.
Yeah, it's weird that I like strategy games. they don't like me. You remember Civ 2 where it had the throne room? Where
I never played Civ 2.
I
played Civ 1, but it still had a room.
Did it have a throne room? Yeah. Okay, well, I think there should be. I think they should bring that back, but have it just be dynamic so that, like, if you have like 1,000 tools or like of all of your citizens, you're just like
seeing the statues and sort of crests with tools.
Right, yeah,
like,
yeah.
If
yeah.
you've got lots of beakers, you've just got nerdy scientists
everywhere
with just like charts filling up everything.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would actually be kind of awesome. Or just a room full of beakers. you just got science shit.
I mean, the best
everywhere.
Would be if they could discover that you're a weird, like, low income, export driven nation that only makes tools. And then for some reason, your guy ends up just getting this sort of. You know, just you get the sort of freaky military leader outfit. You get the sort of all like brown, way tight fitting clothes made out of coarse fabric advisors all lined up. The decor gets really tacky looking for some reason.
Yeah.
That would actually be awesome.
Yeah.
That seems like also the exact kind of thing that the people who design these games would love.
Yes.
I mean, maybe not Dawn of Discovery, but like certainly a Civilization type of game.
Yeah, I would love that.
Yeah.
Seeing screenshots of people's societies represented by the ruling chambers would be really interesting.
Right.
To me.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like a Spore type feature almost.
Yeah. Because Spore does kind of do that, but just in a graph.
Right.
You know what I mean? Spore does kind of determine how militaristic of a society you are.
You get the press photos of your ruler shaking hands with someone else in your chambers like that.
God, that would be incredible, actually. Why hasn't that been done? Maybe it has.
Yeah.
I don't know. But like that would be such a cool thing to like add so much character to the game.
Yeah, when the treaty is signed or whatever and it's got
your
like weird fat like Kim Jong-il guy. Like, wait, that's what I am?
Yeah. Well, see,
I wasn't okay.
That's what was so cool about the RTS component in Spore was that there was that sort of element of customization, which most of these games don't have still, which I think would be interesting to play with. Somebody should make that game.
Well, you know what's cool? I mean, we have no information on this at all, but Soren Johnson, who designed Civilization IV and worked on the strategy part of Spore, all that's known about what he's doing next is that it's like untitled strategy game at Maxis. But I'm pretty excited that they're calling it strategy game.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know what I mean? That's interesting what it suggests because he's an amazing strategy game designer.
We gotta ask that guy if he'll put in a cool throne room feature.
Yeah.
Right.
We should have him on the podcast.
Well, I feel like that's the kind of thing he would like. Who else was I talking to that, Creative Assembly. They like stuff like that. I don't know. I was talking to.
What do those guys do?
Total War series.
Okay.
I was talking to one of their guys last year before Empire came out and he was talking about how much time they put into trying to determine things like at what point will a society declare revolution? Like, what are all the factors that lead to that? And at what point do they reach a threshold? And
That's
awesome. Can you model that across different scenarios, like different countries? And
so hopefully the big strategy game feature for 2011 will be throne rooms and ruling classes be depicted in press coverage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be all over the place.
I hope so. I would take that.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Building structures has been cut.
Yeah. That's the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Bring in your save game from Dawn of Discovery or Civ 4, and we'll generate you a throne room.
International Press Conference 09.
Man.
EA Games. So there's that. Talked about that for a long time. Christ.
Yeah. Sorry, we love that, apparently.
Yeah. We like talking about our fictional games that we made up in our heads.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I played the Fallout 3, the latest Fallout 3 content.
Did you beat the Mothership game?
Zeta? I didn't.
You were not presented with the plaque of Michael Jordan?
No.
At his 386?
No, I haven't played any of the Fallout 3 content. Except for a little bit of the first one. Thanks, Jake. Since a little bit of the first one, which I didn't really get into.
Yeah, that put you off of it.
Yeah. I just, for some reason, I didn't get into it. Nick, we were talking about this. You were the same way.
I have not played any of it.
But yeah. Now you're in space.
Well, there. Now you're in space, says Jake.
Now you're in space.
Now you're in space.
I wasn't even thinking about it, really. I've sort of noticed it had come out, and I wasn't really paying attention. And then today, I saw a bunch of screenshots that were taken by some British game journalist who posted them. I don't even remember where I saw them, but I somehow came across them.
I saw them on Richard Cobbett's Twitter feed, but I don't think he took them.
Right.
I just spilled stuff on myself, so I'll see you later.
That was Jake.
He just peed on himself. He's not...
It wasn't pee. It just looks like it.
What was I saying again? I was talking about a video game.
Fallout 3 screenshots.
Oh, Fallout 3 screenshots. Yeah, so basically I saw a bunch of screenshots of this, and it was actually really surprising because Jake's just walking in circles now. I saw a bunch of screenshots of this.
I found the Z's.
Oh, good. And they just looked really crazy. You know, I mean, the whole thing takes place basically on a spaceship.
Yeah.
And
it's the spaceship from the Fallout games.
Right. Part of it was just that the screenshots I saw were really, really high quality. I mean, they were, mm-hmm. you know, they just looked really good. They're very crisp and nice. I mean, it's from the PC version. And just really, well, I mean, because they're really high resolution.
We love the PC here.
You know, you're spilling it everywhere. What are you doing? Jake is a child. Thanks.
We're throwing this one to the dogs.
Yeah. All right. So I saw these screenshots. They looked crazy. They looked very different from the main Fallout 3 game.
And they looked really cool.
Yeah, they looked really cool. It made me actually excited enough about it to get it and download it and install it and play it, which I did through Games for Windows, which actually worked fine. I can't complain about this particular thing.
Today.
Yeah. No, I haven't. The two times I've tried to download content from Games for Windows, it's worked. So, you know, whatever. I guess they figured out that part. So I played that, and it's pretty linear. I mean, it's not like it expands the world per se and gives you more stuff to explore in the world itself. It just adds on kind of this little instance.
But
where
it does
you,
ask the question, what if a Fallout character got abducted onto a spaceship?
Right. It does answer that burning philosophical
question. And the answer is it looks like an awesome Fallout universe spaceship.
Right. Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's got a good take on it. It's got a good take on an alien spaceship, which is basically what if people from the era Fallout is perpetually stuck in, built a set of a spaceship. I mean, that's basically what it is. It looks really cool. It's just very kind of...
It has the strongest premise of all of the DLC packs.
Yeah, I mean, it's fully self-contained. It's just kind of you're in this place.
Yeah, I mean, from structurally, it's not all that different from the rest, but it's the coolest concept for sure. Yeah.
And the aliens are great. I mean, they're classic old school, like little green men with tinfoil costumes and shiny helmets. I mean, they look rad.
With a multi-million-dollar budget.
Right, exactly.
It's basically,
right.
Yeah, what if a 50s sci-fi movie had the budget of today's Michael Bay film?
Right, or today's AAA video game.
I was trying to stay with the film analogy. Yeah. What if a 1950s alien game had a budget of a current game? It would be a sweet oscilloscope.
It's true.
Maybe two of them duct taped together.
Oh God! Thanks, Jake. So
I'm just spilling things all over myself.
It's true. Here, so. He is.
Anyway, you want to talk about
spilling all over
game?
This podcast?
Yeah. There was a cool moment where you're in the spaceship, and it could be basically a vault for all you know from purely the gameplay. I mean, it's obvious you're on a spaceship, but the actual environment, it's all contained, it's all interior. And then all of a sudden you get to a window and you see out into, you know, the vastness of space.
which you were super excited about.
Chris. I was excited about it. You couldn't see the Earth, though. I'm hoping that you could see the sun.
Do you want a spoiler?
Okay.
I think a screenshot has shown that Earth is visible.
Okay, good. That's all I was hoping for.
Also, you go to the moon in Bioshock 5.
Yes.
So yeah, this, I don't know, based on what I've played of it, I've played about an hour of it, and it seems cool. It's the first Fallout 3 DLC that got me pretty excited. I actually also played some of the Pit DLC at a press event, and it didn't do much for me, it seemed. Because, I mean,
The moon would be awesome for Bioshock.
For Bioshock?
It would be amazing.
It would be amazing because it would act like water, in a sense, in low gravity, and then
but be way
you
more
could also
hardcore.
Take it into the future and do a whole thing. Man, that would be amazing. Anyway, it would go be so on. Rad. Sorry.
I mean, it would be cool
if you could see your throne room.
You could see yourself shaking hands with astronauts from other countries. No, I mean, if it were actually set in, like, with the level of technology, like, in the film Moon.
That's what I was thinking of.
What if the world of Bioshock gets transported to early 80s NASA?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That would be awesome.
That would actually work.
So, Fallout 4, Bioshock 5, what if, like, what Moon
if,
2.
Yeah. What if before the
Anno
space program sort of shat itself and stopped doing anything? Like, what if, you know, when people were still excited about going into space, someone built this crazy city on space?
And then on space.
What if you built a city on space?
That would be awesome.
And then the space programs went away as they are now. And,
right, and you were just stuck up there.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's a depressing thing. My friend Jared said, sorry, this is like 8 steps removed. One of his friends said, who's, you know, about our age, that when he was a little kid, he was bummed that he was too young to be the first person on Mars. And now he's bummed that he's too old to be the first person on Mars. Yeah. That's sad.
Yeah.
But you could live that dream in Bioshock 6, Mars Shock.
I don't want a Bioshock on Mars. We've already had Doom and everything.
Oh, but then like a gateway Mars to hell opens up.
Yeah.
I want the fucking moon. Moon is awesome.
Anyway, do you have any closing thoughts on the Fallout DLC?
No, I think it's fun.
Cool.
My point about the other DLC that I played, The Pit, was that it's actually not very dissimilar to this one structurally. I mean, it's fairly guided. You're going along, you're solving a thing within a new environment. The difference is this one looks and feels so different to the main Fallout 3.
Yeah,
that
it is
it
neat.
Feels
that
it's like,
weird. Just like it looks like it's in the same universe. I mean, if
right,
someone says
exactly,
this is a Fallout game, you don't go, of course it is. You say, oh wow, whoa. You know, sorry, that's a weird explanation. Well, sorry, it's stupid to say.
You don't go, oh wow. You go, oh wow, yo.
I mean, it doesn't 100% look like the art from Fallout 3. It's obviously not a dilapidated Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
But
it's consistent.
It's cool
in terms
and it's
of
just
tone
this
and,
world. Yeah. Like, what would this crazy, completely other portion of the Fallout 3 world look like?
Right.
Yeah. I'm glad that they're showing that. It's nice.
It's also funny that they just stuck that. I mean, because UFO is already there, but it's sort of a funny thing to have in Fallout 3. It's almost more of a Fallout 2 thing than a Fallout 1 thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the rest of Fallout 3 is much more Fallout 1 in tone, but this one's like that weird
kind of goofy,
you know, Fallout 2.
That sort of thing almost always happens when something like this sticks around long enough.
And
we're just going to space.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Fallout
I think
goes Hawaiian.
I think that's why a lot of that Fallout 2 stuff was how it was. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know,
this world needs to up itself.
Right.
And one up itself as well.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I mean, I think the UFO was in the first game, and I think it was more of a Roswell sort of, you're in the desert kind of, you know, funny thing, the Easter egg, you know. I mean, it was a PC Easter egg.
But what if that UFO became a character?
Oh, shit. Yeah, I don't know. So that's cool. We should probably take a break.
Holy shit.
Video game.
We'll be back with Donkey Cox.
Video game.
And we're back.
There's a new TIE fighter coming out. ...
Thanks, Jake.
There you go.
So, yeah, we heard there might be a new TIE fighter and or X-Wing.
Yeah, that was it.
Followed by eyebrow-raising dots.
Yes. The president of Nintendo said that in an interview, didn't he? I mean, he said, like...
The president of Nintendo has declared...
Sorry.
Iwata.
Sorry.
I declare...
The president of LucasArts said something like...
Dot, dot, dot.
He said whatever it was. I was like, we've got nothing to announce about a new TIE fighter. Not. But maybe we will soon. Jesus. Said, like, he said, channeling Iwata, like, extraordinarily coyly. That's what I meant. Not the president. Those statements were so similar in style that
metaphorically, the president of Nintendo.
Yeah.
Well, what's that extra port? Eyebrow raise, like ripping a hole in the ceiling. Like, your saucy eyebrow raise.
Oh, your boy. Saucy eyebrow. Who is you?
Iwata.
Are you addressing Iwata?
I was talking to Iwata.
Mr. Iwata, your saucy eyebrow raise has generated quite eyebrows. A bit of speculation. In yeah.
It may surprise you.
Yes. It will please you with the depth that may surprise you. Hopefully that will be the case with the new TIE Fighter game.
Mm.
I would that might surprise me. TIE Fighter is one of those games that I think about just kind of randomly every few months. Like, it'll just come to mind because it was so fun.
It's one of those games I just, yeah.
TIE Fighter. It was really, really good.
Yeah. What if I was a fighting tie?
The fighting ties. Is that like a college team there?
Spinning bow ties. Yeah.
Oh, okay. We went different directions. Oh. I went college sports team. Barbershop quartet.
Barbershop quartet called the Fighting Ties.
I don't know. You had a spinning.
Oh, well, the mascot probably is a spinning bow tie.
Oh, I see.
It's just a huge bow tie with sort of arms and legs coming out. Like, it's the widest mascot costume. Anyway, that'll be in the new TIE Fighter.
Yeah, probably it will. So there might be a new X-Wing or TIE Fighter game coming out. I liked TIE Fighter.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
I thought it was really good.
Yes.
And what's amazing to me about TIE Fighter is that, X-Wing, I guess, because that came out first, but
yeah.
When I first played X-Wing, we've talked about these games before,
yes,
but, you know, when I first played X-Wing, I didn't play Wing Commander or anything until after that. I don't think I'd ever played any kind of flight game or simulation game or anything like that. And
this is where your love of space began.
My love of space, yeah. Well, actually, I already did think space was cool. I'd never seen Star Wars.
You were 6 or whatever.
Well, yeah.
Or however old, 18.
I was. I definitely had not seen Star Wars, but I did think space was cool. Like, I actually read a lot of books on astronomy and stuff. Like, weird shit that was even too old for me at the time, like Stephen Hawking books and stuff. And so I, you know, vaguely thought space is cool. But then I played this game. And it's amazing to me in retrospect because it was way more complicated than I think I realized it was at the time.
Oh, yeah, you sent me the keybind sheet today, which fills up an entire computer monitor.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I didn't remember that until today, basically.
I mean, admittedly, some of those are volume adjustments
and
graphics.
Well, and a lot of them are redundant, too. It's
right.
Like,
but it was one of those games where
you don't
no
need,
one would ever ship that keybind sheet today.
No.
Right, exactly. But I mean, the amazing thing to me was how many of those keys I remembered actually using. Because there were things like every individual thing you could say to a squad mate, like, attack this thing, go over here, like, follow me. All of those had their own shortcut. And I remember using all of that stuff all the time. Like, you know, you'd be going around this level and you'd be basically managing your squad while fighting yourself and diverting power to your shields or your weapons.
While fighting yourself.
Yeah. It was like a Zelda game or something.
You'd fight your ghost.
But no, it was a
space ghost.
Yeah. Space ghost.
It was a complicated game, but I don't remember thinking it was complicated at the time, which is kind of weird. And I remember when I went...
It's that little child thing of, like, learning incredibly complex system without realizing it.
Yeah. Well, also, video games back then were for babies.
That's true.
They manned up around the PS2.
Yeah.
Yep.
But it was funny because I remember going from that to Rebel Assault and being like... That was...
Yeah, I went the opposite direction.
Oh, really?
The way to go.
Yeah, no, I went from that to Rebel Assault. And I remember having, like, very... clearly having an actual critical opinion about Rebel Assault, which I don't remember really having about games before. I mean, I think previous to that, it was just kind of like, this is fun, or like, I don't really like this game. But when I went from TIE Fighter to Rebel Assault, it was like, wow, this is garbage. Like, what is this crap? This, like, linear, shitty, like, nonsense where you, like,
Rebel Assault's just a shooting gallery.
I know, but I didn't...
You were expecting TIE Fighter with sweet graphics.
Right. I mean, to me, it was just like, it's a game where you pilot a ship. You know what I mean? I wasn't thinking about it in terms of genres. I was like, this is a game where you fly a spaceship around and shoot things, and this one is also. And I remember being really surprised at the different way
that could
be done. God, TIE Fighter. That game was really good. I'm kind of curious if they're actually making a new one or if they're just putting the old one on Steam or something.
Yeah. Or if they're doing nothing.
Or if they're doing... If all those dots...
Dot, dot, like, dot.
Yeah. All those dots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dots.
Yeah.
You guys want to read a mail from a reader?
He's got dots
here. Better, or we're going to just reminisce for
That's true.
20 minutes.
I remember. TIE Fighter
I was on the verge, and then I thought,
I was going to tell a story about Rebel Assault.
Yeah, like really? Shields, what's your story? Lowering shields.
Oh, I guess I will say it really quickly, is that Rebel Assault was probably the first game that made me sort of think about people's intent with the game versus what I was expecting a game to be, because Rebel Assault was... I was like, oh, this is going to be great. Oh, I guess it is actually just sort of like a carnival shooting gallery, but with a crazy video over it. And so well, I guess that was what they were going for.
Yeah.
They did a good job of that.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
That's not what I was. That's not what I wanted, but it was the first time I'd ever sort of had that, like, I guess they achieved the thing they wanted to do.
Weird. It's weird that we both had, like, weird opinion,
formations of out of
Rebel Assault of all games. Yeah.
Yeah. I just sort of was like, hey, Star Wars.
Well, that was, of course, the best, is that, there was a full motion video of Darth Vader walking around with a 70s announcer saying, Darth Vader leading his battle against the rebellion. Like, oh my God.
I think I saw Star Wars actually in between TIE Fighter and Rebel Assault.
I probably hadn't seen Star Wars when I played Rebel Assault either. But
who are you people?
I don't know.
I didn't really.
I remember watching Return of the Jedi first
and just wondering to me until video games.
Just thinking it was kind of cool, but not really knowing what, you know. Anyway,
you guys are weird.
Yeah, I guess so.
No, I just didn't watch like any I wasn't aware of any sci-fi or fantasy stuff for a while. Like, I mean, my friends all were, so I knew that Star Wars existed, but I just never. I don't know. I never came in contact.
The thing about TIE Fighter and X-Wing for me was that just I have a really vivid memory of seeing just like 1,000 lasers blasting off at once in like sort of like the blackness of space, and just it was sort of the first game that had that large scale conflict that I hadn't really experienced in a video game before. Just
it was
kind of
pretty early.
You
for
are
like
a real person
3D.
Within this huge battle going on, which I don't know. I can't think of a game that I'd played at that point that sort of did that.
And I'd played Wing Commander 1 and 2 before those.
Yeah,
I think.
See, I hadn't done that.
Yeah, but I hadn't either. I didn't play those till later. Yeah, none of those games were good. I mean, there weren't tons of like actual full 3D simulations yet at that point. Were there? There's a lot of kind of fake stuff.
Games full 3D?
I think
3D?
They were faked.
Oh, really? Were they?
They were updated later. Okay.
I mean, there was other faked 3D stuff, like Flight Sims. Or
even X-Wing versus TIE Fighter.
X-Wing versus TIE Fighter had polygons.
Did it have polygons?
Yeah.
Some bad ones.
No, that game was like late 90s. That was a full-on 3D game.
Yeah, it was pretty.
Another one of my memories of those two games, actually, is that at the time, all my friends had like an SNES, and they were playing Star Fox. And I remember having a really severe case of like, ha ha ha, look what I've got. Because I mean, you know, they came out like the same year, basically. I mean, I think TIE Fighter and Star Fox both came out in like 93 or something. And I remember like the difference between those two.
I remember my brain bouncing back and forth during that era of like, Super Mario 3 is amazing. Monkey Island 2 is amazing.
Yeah, that's a pretty good
and then it was
bounce
like,
back to have, because those are both amazing.
Yeah. And those two games, and then just, you know, eventually that sort of evened out, but then things like Yoshi's Island came out, and was like, well, no one's ever going to make that on the PC, ever.
Right, that's true.
So, yeah.
Got Jazz Jackrabbit on the PC.
Hmm.
Cliff Blazinski.
Speaking of Cliff Blazinski, let's read some reader mail.
Yeah.
Cliff Blazinski writes in, have you guys played Jazz Jackrabbit? he then goes on for a while. P.S. The Wizard rules.
Brendan Petrichek writes, hello, I learned of a wizard-related drinking game and thought you might like to hear about it. To play, you need beer cans and tape, preferably duct tape. Every beer that you finish, you stack one on top of the last one and tape it together. If the growing stack of beer cans becomes as tall as you are now a motherfucking wizard, and that is your wizard staff. Apparently there's more to it, but we didn't really bother with any of that. And then he links to this page that's all like has this huge elaborate rule set for the wizard drinking game. It's called Wisest Wizard, apparently.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah, I know. It's really complicated. It includes like leveling up and stuff, which is kind of...
So if anyone plays that, please let us know. Yeah. Or if you dream that you've played it, let us know about that.
I'll link to it in the downloadable content thread. I'm not going to read the whole thing here. But that exists. Weird.
Not related to our wizard, though.
No.
Our wizard.
Good old wizard.
I think it's all the same at heart.
All wizards share a common ancestor. Wizard.
The wizard, yeah. Corey Larson writes in regarding our Counter-Strike conversation from, I don't know, a couple episodes ago. He says,
I don't remember that one.
On the actual podcast from last week, the one not about poo, but the one before that, you guys mentioned drivable vehicles in Counter-Strike, but didn't mention many specifics. Okay, so here we go. He's going to inform us. He says, to the best of my recollection, this was around Beta 6 or Beta 7 for Counter-Strike, and the map, the only one I know of that was developed by the CS team and not community-made, was DE Jeepathon 2K.
Jesus, that was an actual beta map? Ugh.
So he describes it. Each team
I think there were many, yeah. So it was just the one.
Yeah. Each team had one fully drivable vehicle that looked like the Willys GP, and there were some jumps and ramps located throughout the map and a water section as well. Yeah, I don't remember that either. The place to plant the bomb was actually a toilet on the opposite side of the map from the Jeeps. This was seriously the most fun I ever had in a game, and at the time, drivable vehicles were almost unheard of.
That is true.
Yeah.
I totally don't remember seeing this.
Same here. It was amazing to me, even though I didn't get
it
into
it. It was like a sneak peek at what Team Fortress 2 Brotherhood of Arms was going to be.
Right.
Brotherhood of Arms.
Or Brother, wasn't that what it was called?
Yeah, I think it was. I was just laughing at it. I mean, it's just, sounds like every other game now. But back then, it was like, oh.
Do you guys have any other games or mods that introduced features that were at one time new and shiny and no one has ever thought would catch on or be technologically feasible? Thanks, guys. Happy thumbing.
Oh, man. Actually, I will talk about a thing that maybe a lot of other games have done since, but it's from when I when I read this email before we were recording, I was thinking about Urban Terror, the
game
mod that I was
made.
Working on. Yeah, I was working on that when I was in college. It's a first-person shooter, but one thing that it had, and I might have talked about this before, but it had a first-person ledge grab feature. Like, the game was sort of CS meets Action Quake in style, so it was sort of real weapons teams in a sort of realistic environment. But if you were on a rooftop, and there was another rooftop that was about, like, 4 or 5 feet away from you, or, like, 3 or 4 feet away, you know, like, across an alleyway and a little bit up, you could jump to it, and then if you just kept holding forward, from the first-person view, you would see yourself sort of climb over the top of it. I mean, we didn't animate the hands, but it was kind of a shitty version in Quake 3 Engine of what they do with Mirror's Edge, and then from the third person,
and
with
Brink upcoming from Splash Damage.
Yeah, it was. Oh yeah, but yeah, it was the first time I had seen that in a game, and it was in that mod, and it sort of changed how I thought about first person spaces, and then I didn't see anyone else do that for a really long time. But that was that said, other people might have been doing that. We might have accidentally or actually stolen it from Action Half-Life, and I don't even know that. But
well, it certainly did take a while before it became. But, even now, it's only just becoming a thing people are doing.
Yeah, that was a
commercial
game. Cool feature from a mod.
Yeah,
cool.
Well, I mean, speaking of Brotherhood in Arms or whatever the hell it was called, what the hell was that? What it's called?
What are you talking about?
Brotherhood of Arms.
Brotherhood of Arms. Yeah, the Team Fortress 2. I mean, that was a game that was never even released and had a huge impact.
Yeah, that was like the Mario 64 of the PC world, except that it didn't come out.
Right. Like that sort of that.
I wasn't sure where you were going with this, but yeah.
Yeah, had an amazing impact on team-based multiplayer shooters. Yep. I mean, it.
It was secretly the design document for the first Battlefield game.
Right, yeah.
Right, yes, yeah.
And then that's like almost everything has some elements of that now. We were talking about that recently, actually, about how almost every game now has some level of that class-based kind of persistent thing. Well, I don't know if that game was persistent or not, but you know.
It probably wasn't.
It was born out of that same kind of line of like your character being specialized in something and then.
Although some of that's sort of being weeded out now lately. I mean, Well, I mean, if you look at things like the. One hilarious example is the guy who was just going to be the ammo feeder for the machine gun. But I mean, I think some of that specialization you'll see, like Battlefield, for example. I'm not sure what they're doing for the new Battlefield game, obviously, but I think what was it, a bad company? I don't think has a medic now, and some of those things were that just people aren't really using in terms of specializing classes. Right. I mean, I think Battlefield 1943 works pretty well, actually, because they've sort of streamlined the classes down to just three.
But the overall philosophy.
But the philosophy,
yeah,
sure,
I mean, you can see that
that
sort
is
of
influential.
That wave that sort of.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we
broke.
Need to do this, and maybe not so much.
Well, but I mean, you know, all those features rose up, and then the ones that stuck.
Right, were the good ones.
But the beginning of that seems like it was born out of first Team Fortress and then cribbed from the press about the
Team
original
Fortress
TF2.
2, right, yeah.
What year was that? Was that pre-Tribes? No.
No, because Tribes was out, I think, the same year as Half-Life.
Yeah.
And I mean, Tribes is another game that I, you know.
Yeah.
Tribes is not, it's not really an example of what we're talking about there. But
yeah.
Because you're not really, I don't think there were classes were sort of combining to help each other.
No, I'm not talking about classes. I'm just talking generally, like, in Tribes, to me, those big, huge open arenas was something that was pretty new for shooters.
Actually did have cooperation in Tribes. I mean, there were you could act like a laser spotter. Well, I know, but I'm talking about just like specifically like a class combining with another class.
Yeah, okay,
But anyway.
I mean, like the heavy guy and the light guy.
The heavy guy and the light
guy,
you use this laser spotter and do things,
You're just talking about the sort of huge open environment, sort of mega team multiplayer.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's tons of examples of stuff like this. I don't know. Ultima Underworld, stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, the original
Team Fortress.
The original Zelda on NES. I mean, there's I mean, obviously a lot of games that pioneered things. But yeah.
I think it's interesting.
I just thought of one really lame example.
What?
is
Burger Time.
This is really stupid, but the Matrix mod for Max Payne was actually like, if you compare that mod to the game, the full game Total Overdose.
Yeah.
Like I don't know. It's there's a
lot. Is it
lot
like the same thing?
It's pretty much the same thing. I mean, like in the Matrix mod, you basically had an action button that was you did sort of crazy flips and kung fu tricks, and the animations were actually pretty well done. I mean, it was carried off pretty well, but for a mod, for a lame.
So the guys who made Total Overdose.
Yeah, it was actually fairly similar, but it's not
weird.
That's not very interesting.
Okay. That's an extremely specific weird thing.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you have the experience to speak about that. Like,
I guess,
those
yeah.
Each of those things.
No, people will back me up on that. The Matrix mod was actually kind of funny and sort of fun.
All right. Did that mod the opera for Half-Life? Did that ever come out? Do you guys remember what that
was? Oh, yeah. I think it did.
It's in development like a million years ago.
I think it did. Yeah.
I don't know.
Though, yeah, it was sort of a really fast.
It was like what Max Payne eventually ended up doing, kind of where you sort of had the slow motion bullet time and stuff, right? Before bullet time was really cool in a game.
Yeah.
The most extreme example of anything like this is probably CTF also.
Like the three wave.
Oh, yeah. A extreme gameplay staple that just came out of a mod.
Yeah, that's true. CTF is a great example. Like, oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And those guys are a real company now, three wave.
Yes.
Well, I don't know how many of them are the same guys, but the name is now.
And that company always sort of seems like Nullsoft to me. I'm just like,
yeah, right.
Like this sort of weird hardcore underground internet company that now I guess is real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But who knows what they actually are.
Right.
They're probably listening right now going, duh. That's pretty much all they say.
Yeah.
All right. So,
goddamn Nick Brecken talking about this stuff.
Brian Block. Thanks, Jake. Brian Block writes in. He writes, I recently played through Been There, Dan That, and found it to be pretty hilarious. He's referring to the Zombie Cow adventure game.
Which I don't think any of us played, even though we recommended last week.
Oh, I've played some of Been There, Done That.
Oh, good.
I always say
Been There, Dan That.
Yeah, Been There, Dan That.
Damn it.
Yeah, which I haven't played Time Gentlemen Please yet because I want to beat the first one first. But anyway, he says, I found it to be pretty hilarious. More importantly, I thought the puzzles were fantastic. Things just clicked in my brain right when they should have. I liked it so much that I paid for the sequel Time Gentlemen Please, and I'm sad to say I found it to be worse. For whatever reason, I seem to be struggling more with the puzzles, falling into the typical permutation trap of rubbing everything on everything. When trying to reason out why the puzzles were better than the other, the only thing I could come up with was that things just clicked better in Been There, Dan That, where they did not in Time Gentlemen Please. So his question is, Jake, is there anything you could say regarding the design process for puzzles and adventure games? Presumably no designer wants a permutation trap, but the things that they're dealing with are so subjective. Also, Chris and Nick can participate as well.
Thanks.
You guys can play along at home.
So anyway, what makes a good puzzle, he asks. Adding, I know it's technically a combination rather than a permutation. Thanks, Brian. Oh, Bistromathics from the forum.
That's a hard question for me to ask with any I could ask it. That'd be a really hard question for me to try and answer with any degree of confidence or authority on anything. So I'm probably actually just going to not.
Okay.
I mean, I don't really know what to say about that.
On the other hand, I have the answer to that question.
Nick Brecken, renowned adventure game designer.
No, I'm full of shit.
No. Yeah.
Is full of shit.
Yes. I mean, I think in adventure games, I don't know how it goes for other games, but it is just a sort of balance that I think is hard to quantify because adventure games are weird and dumb. Yeah. between how much you sort of telescope the solution to it, you know, how obscure the things are,
this is something
adventure game puzzles are weird.
Yeah, you guys have probably played a lot more adventure games than I have. So can you think of an adventure game that has puzzles that are, I mean, like, what in terms of just speaking about puzzles, like, what is at the top of adventure gaming for you that, you know, in puzzle design? Would you even be able to quantify that?
I can name a puzzle that I really like that I think most people really hate, which makes it a stupid example. But There's a puzzle in Grim Fandango in year 2.
I already know what you're talking about.
In Rubikava, where you're trying to piece together this mystery to get the fake betting. You have to get a fake betting stub, and you have to know the day that the race occurred, what race it was, and all these things.
Yep.
And a lot of people hate this puzzle because one of the things, they're just in the ambient soundtrack, the announcer in the background is like is always giving you promotions for how Tuesday is Kitty Hat Day, and everyone who goes to the cat races on Tuesday gets a free hat. And you sort of dig through stuff and you get the original photo finish for the race, and but you don't know what day of the week it is. You only know like the serial number of it or something. And then if you look in the foreground of the photos, everyone has a little bands on their heads with cat ears. And I just remember I was looking at that picture and I was like, what day was it? Oh my God, Tuesday is Kitty Hat Day. That race was on a Tuesday. I'm a fucking ace detective. And I remember just... all the whole world of that game sort of swirled around to correctly make my brain know the answer to that. That was hardcore. That said, I know so many people for whom that puzzle was just impossible, and they just brute forced it or killed themselves. So,
I used a guide.
That was my favorite moment in almost like all of adventure gaming of that sort, at least of like this.
Like it's, cool. It's funny that like
the I didn't feel like I was like, I mean, I knew that obviously the game design team on Grim put all those things there exactly for me to find them, but it all worked in a way that made me feel like I was actually solving a mystery versus use monkey on waterfall, spigot
to create a funnel,
to create a monkey wrench, like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
like that whole puzzle is kind of the opposite of that in Monkey Island, where you use a banana on a metronome to hypnotize a monkey, which you then pick up and put in your inventory, and then use on a valve, which turns the monkey into a monkey wrench. That is the opposite. That said, some people think that's the best crap in the world. Who knows?
Yeah, a game that
I laughed a whole bunch at that when I played that game, but I that puzzle frustrates me.
Yeah,
the that's actually a lot of, in many cases, the difference between like first-person adventure games and third-person adventure games, for whatever reason. Like, first-person adventure games always end up going more utilitarian with the puzzles and sort of more like putting a pattern together or filling a gap or something, whereas a lot of times the third-person adventure games are I think probably because they deal with a character walking around a world and they want the world itself to have a lot of character, they end up being a lot more very specific items as opposed to kind of just generic items. But anyway, one game that I think kind of falls in between the two things you were describing with the Grim Fandango, like ultra detective thing, which I agree is a really cool thing when you actually have that moment.
Yeah, that's a tough one though. Yeah. I can't sell that as a recommendation to anyone.
No, it's
I've had that moment though where you actually by some circumstance solve what they intended, and it's just like, oh wow. Right.
When it's a really clever thing, it's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, one just happened really organically.
But a game that I think kind of falls in between those is Day of the Tentacle, which...
I like that we're only talking about LucasArts games. Yeah, I know. Piss off that one other guy who wrote it.
I know them the best. But it's... The central hook of the game is that you're going between these three time periods. The colonial era, basically the present day, and the future, where the world has been enslaved by tentacles. And a lot of the puzzles have to do with putting an item in one time period and then going and finding it combining it with an object in one time period and then seeing the results in a different time period.
You put the wine in the time capsule, then it's vinegar in the future.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And a lot of those puzzles use kind of that weird, goofy adventure game logic, but the time...
Right, it's all sort of based on the actual rules of the passage of time.
Exactly. Yeah. And in a lot of cases in Day of the Tentacle, you end up having those moments where you know what you're supposed to do before you do it, which is not usually how adventure games work. Usually in adventure games, you realize what you're supposed to do as you're doing after you do it.
In adventure games, that feels so good, though,
it ahead of time,
If I send myself that wine, it'll be vinegar.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And then it's like, use wine on time capsule.
Yeah.
He put it in. It's, oh man, I'm going to go to the future. It's vinegar.
Yeah. It's super great when you can do that.
I know how smart I am.
Right.
Exactly. I'm apparently just as smart as the guys who wrote this game.
Right. And they think there's a lot of that stuff. That's a really great game.
I think that seems to actually, since we're talking about LucasArts games, that seems to be like sort of the goal of a lot of those LucasArts games, especially the sort of, like that branch, like not the Indiana Jones dig ones, but the sort of the comedy line was basically they were, I felt like they were sort of hoping that they were making a sort of cleverness engine.
Right.
Like when you're playing this, it will enable you to feel clever, and it backfired all the time.
Yeah.
Because it actually made you feel stupid and like the other person was laughing at you. But when that stuff works, you do feel like a smart, goddamn smart person.
Right.
Or like you're playing as characters who say all this clever stuff and you're doing things that, you know, I don't know. That's
it's proportional to the amount of time you spend often. I mean, like, even if I solve one of those puzzles sometimes, it's just like, oh, that took me like 2 hours. No resolution of a puzzle is worth that amount of time.
Yeah.
Because I just want to advance the story at that point.
Well, it depends. But, I mean, I think for everyone, adventure games are so weird because they're, you know, as we've said in past podcasts, they are all based on kind of a discrete list of unique events. I mean, it's not, you're not working with a single mechanic that you're refining and learning over time. So, I mean, you're almost approaching each one fresh. I mean, some games do repeat mechanics, you know, but for the most part in an adventure game, you're essentially tackling a new problem each time. And so it's kind of random for each person.
Yeah, sometimes it'll call back a scenario, but two or three of the rules have changed,
which means
that the puzzle solutions are entirely different anyway, but you sort of know the overall goals. Anyway, we talked about LucasArts games there for a while. You want to unfairly talk about Sierra games for a second? You know that one time when you make a cat mustache? No.
Well, I did. The game that is like the opposite of this in the most frustrating way to me was Runaway, which came out several years ago, and a couple people recommended, and like after our adventure game discussion, whenever that was, at least a few other people replied to us either on forums or email.
Right, saying, what about Siberia and Runaway?
Runaway, yeah. And I really felt Runaway just failed in that respect so hard. There are so many cases in Runaway where I knew exactly what I should be doing.
It was the master of pick up those scissors. I don't think I need those. And then someone's like, you need to cut a hole in this. Didn't I see some scissors somewhere? Like, you, I knew that.
Yeah.
Where your observation of the world and like you making the characters stand and stare at something doesn't match up with the game logic.
Right.
Bah.
I mean,
Hotel Dusk.
There were instances that were far more obscene than what you said in Runaway. I mean, there were times when your character should know he needs the scissors, and yet he doesn't yet. And you're like, look, asshole, I know I need these scissors right now. I'm telling you to pick them up. Pick them up, you son of a bitch. And he won't. And you have to wait until
you find like a secret gate somewhere else in the game. Like,
right.
That, yeah.
Oh, I actually beat that game and I couldn't stand it.
Yeah, I beat Hotel Dusk and I felt the same way.
I couldn't beat Hotel Dusk. I got so frustrated by it. It was a shame because it looked awesome.
Yeah, I liked the look
loved
of it.
How it looked.
Yeah.
Like, did you get up to the roof?
No.
It's pretty sweet.
I got to like the second floor of the hotel.
You can see the moon.
Oh, really? Oh, I'm playing that now.
No, but I
don't know.
it has
an incentive.
It's up there with the sort of backside of the huge neon sign that says Hotel Dusk and there's good music up there.
Oh, that's cool, yeah.
You sort of see a person way in the very back getting silhouetted and stuff, but then they probably tell you that the doors have all randomly, which ones are locked and which ones have characters in them have been randomly rolled again. And, maybe someone mailed you a cardboard box you can't look in.
Oh, I hated that. When you have this suitcase and you can't, oh my God, that game was so frustrating.
But then if you talk to the concierge and he tells you that there's a suitcase in your room that you saw a second ago, then you can go back up and open it. So, that's how not to design an adventure game puzzle.
Oh man. Speaking of adventure games, Sean Mills writes, hello, Thumbsters. I was listening to your podcast recently, and a fellow listener was asking about adventure games. I was wondering why you never mentioned GOG. It's a great site for getting adventure games. I just bought Broken Sword 2 from there.
Never mentioned GOG?
I'm enjoying it a lot.
Said, yeah, wink. GOG.
They don't know that.
I know.
Okay, the joke here is that for like 6 fucking months, while doing the sound check before every episode, all these assholes would ever do is GOG.com, wink.
We used to read down the list of games that Chris had to test the microphone levels, and this is actually going to be very interesting to read. So the order of games is LucasArts Classic Adventure Pack, Company of Heroes, DEF CON, Day of the Tentacle, Full Throttle, a GOG.com box, Grim Fandango, then, you know, Half-Life and Monkey Island 2. Anyway.
Half-Life 2.
Yeah.
All the games we've talked about today.
Yeah, anything. Anyway.
I just realized they're in alphabetical order, except for Day of the Tentacle, which should be to the
left. Probably moved it.
Oh, jeez.
Anyway, like the sixth box in a row in here is GOG.com. P PCDL with a winking smiley face. The platform's got a little wink next to it because it's actually downloadable.
So now that no one has any idea what we're talking about.
Anyway, needless to say, if you could hear the microphone tests for every episode of Idle Thumbs, basically in 2008 and the first half of this year, it would have Nick and I saying, GOG.com, PCDL, wink, over and over. So we have talked about GOG a lot.
Yeah.
Just not in the recorded portion.
That? Anyway, sorry for who gives a crap about any of that.
What's the question?
GOG is a great service.
Yeah, it is a good service. That's where I got Castles and Castles 2 from recently.
Castles and Castles.
Yes. Anyway, this guy got Broken Sword 2 from there. Broken Sword is another good adventure game. That was from Revolution.
Yep.
I actually really liked Broken Sword 1. I actually didn't like Broken Sword 2. I thought it wasn't that good.
That's the one where you go on vacation again, but to like, South America
it's
or something?
Mayan stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
And then Broken Sword 3 I didn't really play, and then... Broken Sword 4, I think they might actually be making. I don't know.
I think it's out and it was
not good.
I don't know.
Anyway, so he says, in fact, they even have a few freebies. For example, Lore of the Temptress and Beneath the Steel Sky.
Oh, those games were released for free to the Scum VM team.
Yeah. So you can get those from either place for free. I think it's great that adventure games are making a comeback, he says. Now all we need are some new text adventure games or my life will be complete. Did you guys ever play Zork or The Pawn?
There are a billion new text adventure games. You should.
Yeah. There's 8,000 trillion new text adventure games.
Check out the Interactive Fiction Awards. I don't know what they're called, but if you just search for that on Google, you'll find list after list of the best IF games made in a while.
I mean, there's a whole kind of community of like respected modern day amateur text adventure creators. It's actually pretty cool. It's a really cohesive community with like personalities that people know and like people who write things like, you know, write kind of manifestos and stuff. It's not the right word, I guess, but you know, people who write critical essays and things on text adventure games and talk about them. It's actually pretty impressive. And there's Z Machine, which, you know, will run it's just a sort of generic, text adventure interpreter. Yeah. So there's definitely a lot of that going on.
It's not in the commercial space, but it exists.
Yeah, it does. And
we're talking a lot about this.
Yeah. Also, Beneath the Steel Sky is a fun game. I thought it was cool.
Yep.
So there. Yeah. Sorry, we forgot to mention that. Now we have. Wasn't there something in here about expansions?
Yes, DLC expansion thing. Yeah.
Was it a good game, bad game? Good game.
GOG.
PCDL. Winky face.
All right, so Shanamel Ungar writes... God, you guys.
Writes, wink.
PCDL. He writes, greetings, Opposable Ones. Love the show. Keep up the good work. Two questions, both related to Steam and its effect on the gaming universe. One, when the system requirements for Dragon Age were released, one of the websites I frequent commented that they were too high, with the writer ending the piece noting, it looks like Dragon Age won't run on my computer. Now that writer's foibles aside, I took exception to this because we have a fairly robust tool to examine whether the requirements are too high, the Steam Hardware Survey. The survey tells us where people are in terms of hardware, so system requirements should probably be compared to it to determine whether they're too high. Do you think developers use the tool to determine what kind of system requirements to aim for, at least for the hardcore PC market? I don't know.
Maybe. Some probably do.
Yeah, some probably do.
Some probably look at it and go, well, that's nice.
A company like BioWare probably is big and successful enough that they... probably don't spend a lot of time necessarily looking at another developer's kind of public data.
Everyone
looks at it, but I suspect some of them use it more or less. Like I suspect BioWare does their own focus testing and like market research and stuff.
More paying attention to what they can do on a console and trying to keep that relatively.
Right, but I mean,
yeah. Although Dragon Age may not be the best example.
I know. But
it's almost guaranteed that every PC developer looks at the Steam data and says, "Oh, crazy. Well, I guess that's what the average Steam customer is at," and then either looks at their own data or their own playtest, they've just set, like, we know from everything that is said on the internet and what is for sale and what was recently for sale, what we think the target for this is. I mean, I'm sure there is some combination. That said, I'm sure some developers were totally stoked when the Steam Hardware Survey started coming out.
I suspect, especially a lot of smaller developers, it's a godsend to have that kind of data.
Okay, good. I can finally write off, you know, Glide support.
Right.
We're back with more reader mail.
Yeah. So Dylan Farrell writes, I guess we must have read this guy's question about adventure games before. He says, first of all, I'd like to thank you for answering my previous email about adventure games.
We talked about them more this week.
Guess I should have said I wasn't really old enough to even know what they were when they came out. On episode 35 of Vital Thumbs, a viewer asked, why does it seem that fighters are the biggest in the competitive scene of video games? Though due to recent events such as EVO 2009, where there are over 1,000 competitors in the Street Fighter 4 pool of the event, suggests that fighters may be the biggest. In all reality, it's the easiest scene to get into. Whereas the competitive scene of first-person shooter games might require you to make a team, and real-time strategy games are hard to break into as well. Right now, the fighting game community is a very niche community, but with the past recent releases of Street Fighter 4, King of Fighters 12, the release of Marvel vs. Capcom 2, and the upcoming release of Tatsunoko vs. Capcom and Tekken 6, it is a possibility that the scene will grow even further than what it is now. Also, okay, so I don't have any comment on that, but this guy probably already knows what he's talking about.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's probably true. I think a fighting game is probably an easier thing to get into than a hardcore shooter or an RTS. I mean, right. Well, you know, I mean,
to beat
it's like we're all so good at fighter games. And then they, you know, I suck at fighting games, but I understand like what the framework is to be good at them, even if I'm not necessarily good at them myself. You know, it's like you're right there, you're in an arena, and you have to kill the guy. Like a real-time strategy game, it's like to even know what you're supposed to be trying to do.
You're there in that arena.
I don't know.
He's in front of you. You got to kill him.
Well, you know what I mean, right?
Yep.
Like,
got to throw some fireballs.
There's two health bars.
StarCraft
and a bunch
of Hadouken.
Like, yeah.
Yep.
So he says, also, I found this comment on an article about some comparison shots of builds of Final Fantasy 13 that might amuse you all. So then he has a pretty ridiculous email here from a guy.
I like that he jumped from all that stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Anyway, here's this retarded thing about Final Fantasy 13. So,
all right,
people know what gets them on Idle Thumbs now.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly.
It's not enough to have an opinion. You also have to have
you have to do something outrageous.
Here's this novelty I found on the internet,
or mention the wizard.
You know. Right.
All right. So, anonymous forum guy writes, Final Fantasy 13 has been downgraded for Suckbox 360. That's Suckbox 360, aka DVD Heater, has no game at 1080p. Not only games look bad on Suckbox, all games are downgraded for that Suckbox 360. I am hearing that Final Fantasy 13 will be 12 DVDs on Suckbox 360. Shame on Square Enix for downgrading the game for crap box 360. Now it looks like crap for Suckbox 360 version. Killzone 2 looks 50 times better than all Suckbox games. Final Fantasy 13 looked good initially too, but now the game is destroyed for the Suckbox 360. So that's an assessment.
Also known as the crap box.
I like that he's got one substitution for the crap box.
I thought you said DVD heater at first.
Yeah, it did say that.
It did.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was supposed to be eater.
No, well, maybe it was supposed to be that, but he says the Suckbox 360, aka DVD heater.
I don't know. It's your DVDs.
Like, what does that mean?
It just keeps them warm for you. Well, I'm glad that.
Oh my goodness.
He never included Microsoft with a dollar sign. And that whole
he really post. Didn't need to. He went the extra mile on everything else.
Suckbox.
I'm imagining what that email looks like on the page, and it's a lot of Suckbox.
It is a lot of Suckbox. I didn't realize it was actually that much until I started reading it.
I can watch you getting progressively excited. Yeah. Suckbox. Yeah. Suckbox. Crap box.
Yeah,
that guy.
Also, the first time he says it, it's in capital letters. I didn't emphasize for that time because I didn't realize all the other ones weren't going to be capital letters. So
Suckbox.
Downgraded for Suckbox 360. That Suckbox. He uses it twice in a row in a single sentence.
Does he trademark it the first time?
No.
The Suckbox computer patent entertainment pending. System in all caps.
Microshit already owns the copyright on Suckbox 360.
Microshaft, Suckbox, Crapbox.
Yeah.
360. Anyway, 12 DVDs. It's like a return to the age of floppy disks.
I know. So yeah, I mean, speaking of like X-Wing and TIE Fighter, I had X-Wing. I think I had TIE Fighter and CD, but I had X-Wing on like 13 floppies.
This is a real diversion. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's all.
And I had Civilization on like 12 floppies, I think, or something like that, however many came on. Lots of floppies.
We've talked at work about like giving a contest winner a copy of the first Tales of Monkey Island episode on like 100 floppy disks.
Really? Yeah, that's awesome. Like
building a disk span installer. So yeah. Please insert disk. I guess it would have disk 114, which would be
the hidden, or whatever Easter egg.
But anyway. Or we could put it out on the Xbox. I mean, suck box. I mean, crap box.
Which one? Maybe it depends. Maybe, you know, suck box and crap box. Maybe
crap box is, you know, once the towel gets in there, it's the...
That's the crap box?
Yeah.
It's the crap box elite.
Yeah.
Crap box pro. Can't chop pro.
Crap box pro. Paint job pro.
Free association here. I'm just styling, freestyling.
Deluxe paint 2.
Depaint.
Shitbox. Paint. Box.
Boxes.
Ice box.
Tech corner. War has changed. War never changes. PCDL. GOG.com. I'm just off the top of my head here. I'm just,
dots.
I'm just
dot box.
We got dots.
Shit dot. Dot dot.
Wizard.
Fuck, why are we still here?
We're not.
Far crap.
Video game.
You don't know what time donkey balls means?
Oh, right. I guess I do. Okay. All right, let's go.
It's like when you're sort of racing a ghost.
All right.
Mm. Like a time donkey balls challenge.
Yep, right.
It's the donkey balls.
It's the balls trial.
It's the donkey balls time challenge where you raise a ghost ball.
Yeah.
Super donkey balls.
Super donkey balls. God. It's just one letter different.
Super donkey ball adventure. Yeah, it is only one letter different.
Hey, it's like Donkey Kong was originally monkey.
Amazing.
I don't know if he was.
Monkey Kong.
Super Monkey Kong.
He probably wasn't that. Was there ever a Super Donkey Kong?
Those are still Super Donkey Balls.
Oh, right. I must have been thinking of that. I get those confused sometimes.
This is a new meme, Donkey Balls. All right,
let's... What was that? That was like a donkey.
Balls.
Ball.
Yeah.
It's like this donkey's having a ball.
Yep.
He's having a blast as well.
Oh, man.
Video game.
Suck box.
Suck box. Crap box.
Video game.
It's in space.
It's in space.
It's in space.
It's in space. Also, Jesus. Man, speaking of things we talk about every fucking 2 days, the moon.
Video game.
Will Jake make it? Find out in the special Podblast event. Donkey Cock Country. Or Donkey Balls.
Rated TV MA.
Or Time Donkey.
Time Donkey Balls.